This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Now, if you have a question for Zorba, this is a great time to give us a call at 1-800-462-7413. And along with our call, Zorba, some interesting topics to talk over?
Yes, kids and television. Does TV make kids stupid?
Oh, okay. And?
Nexium, Prilosec, is something going on with them? What are the side effects of taking these drugs? A lot of people take them every single day. There's some new research that shows there may be side effects no one has really considered.
Find out about that and our recipe.
Grilled Mediterranean chicken. If you like chicken, if you like the grill, and if you want to be in the Mediterranean Sea, this is for you.
Looking forward to that, too. To the phones we go, Zorba, and we welcome...
Wait a second, Tom. I have a question for you. Do you use Facebook? I mean, I use Facebook. I enjoy using WPR's Facebook page. I want to know if you use Facebook.
Well, I have my picture and my name on Facebook,
but I have
a surrogate who actually uses the Facebook... because I'm not any good at it at all.
Well, listen, a while ago I was reading some comments on our show, and somebody mentioned that you sound just like actor Adam West. That's you. You sound like Adam West. I think we ought to call you Adam West. We ought to call Adam West himself, record both of you saying the same thing, and post them on our website, kind of a blind audio taste test. Wouldn't that be fun? What do you think?
I'm trying to remember who Adam West is.
Oh, gosh, Tom, you've got to get with it. You've got to get with it. Adam West, that's a great Adam West story. We're going to do it. I hope so. But anyway.
You don't know who Adam West is either. Well, we'll get some emails. I think he was not a superhero.
Stop thinking.
I'll do that and welcome our first caller at 1-800-462-7413. A listener with us in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba. Thank you for taking my call.
How can we help you?
Well, I'm a very active, healthy 58-year-old guy that recently retired after 30 years of being a faithful road warrior for a large drug company. Mm-hmm. The problem I'm having is that sleep has never come easy for me, and I can't seem to be able to sleep more than 3 to 4 hours each night. It's almost like I have an imbalance or something missing that keeps me from getting a good night's sleep.
And all that experience with the drug company didn't help you at all?
Not at all. I guess being on the road really hurt more than helped.
Well, you know, sleep is very interesting. Tom's right. You know, the drug company is the ideal sleep. It's kind of fascinating. You know, look at kids and babies. Obviously, they sleep. You look at kids who are in third and fourth grade, and they run around, and then they collapse, and they're in a deep sleep. And our sleep changes as we get older. As you know, it becomes more fragmented. It becomes lighter. We wake up during the night. We don't even have to have aches and pains. We just kind of wake up. And some people naturally sleep deeper and longer than other people. So, first of all, you're in the class of the lighter sleeper, lighter non-sleeper.
Correct.
Now, have there ever been times if you had your druthers and you were able to sleep, how long would you sleep?
Ooh, 8 or 9 hours a night.
8 or 9 hours. When was the last time you slept 8 to 9 hours?
I go through cycles where sometimes during the year I can sleep 8 or 9 hours.
Okay, okay.
But then there's other times when it's only 3 or 4 hours.
Okay, and there's a big difference between them. So let's look at drugs to and from caffeine. What sort of consumption do you have with caffeine?
I've given up caffeine.
Okay.
I just drink a little 50% caffeine, 50% decaf coffee in the morning. And that's all the caffeine I have all day.
Okay. So, first of all, caffeine is interesting because for some people, they're highly sensitive. And what happens is they'll drink it throughout the day, not realizing that that's actually keeping them awake at night. Caffeine's a big issue. So you want to cut that out. Now, second issue is sleep deprivation can lead to a deeper sleep. So sometimes the way you reset your biological clock, let's say you normally go to sleep at 10 o'clock at night, you go to sleep at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and you do that for 3 days in a row. And usually on day number 4, you're so tired and exhausted, you'll go into a deep sleep, and that can reset the bio clock. That's one of the ways, one of the things I would consider. The other thing I would consider is warm milk. There was a recent article that I read that came out of England. England is sort of the center of warm milk. That actually showed that having warm milk before you go to sleep at night, 4 to 6 ounces, might actually do something to the body. It might be sitting there and the warmth and reminding you of mother. Who knows what actually goes on, but warm milk. And the other thing is alcohol. Alcohol might put you to sleep initially, but actually alcohol disturbs the sleep later on. You know,
right,
so
I've read that it can disturb your sleep.
Yeah.
Something else you often mention, Zorba, is a really, really dark bedroom.
That's right. That's right. And actually, what we'll do is if you go to our website, zorbapastor.org, we'll give you an excellent link for sleep hygiene. And that's the phrase that we use. It's kind of an outrageous term in some ways. But sleep hygiene are a whole bunch of things that you can do. And we'll put that sleep hygiene on the website. I do want to mention one drug that's interesting. There's a drug that's given for chronic pain that was developed for epilepsy called gabapentin. It was a seizure drug. And they found out that people who had chronic back pain and other neuropathic pain were helped by this drug. This drug also helps a lot of people sleep. And it's not addictive. It's not habit forming. It's not like a Valium going to sleep or some of the other sleeping pills. Mm-hmm. And gabapentin, 300 milligrams to 800 milligrams at bedtime, might help you sleep. And I would consider that.
Well, thank you very much.
We appreciate the call, and we thank you, too. Our producer, Zorba, whose name is also Adam, has helped us with
that's
Adam
right.
West.
That's right.
Batman.
Oh, Batman, of course. Batman, of course. How could I possibly even think that? Oh, of course. You know what, Tom? Not only do you sound like Adam West, Batman, but you look like Adam West, too.
Yeah.
Anyone who comes to our website, zorbapastor.org, are going to look at you and say, you and Adam West, one and the same.
Well, yeah, I have the suit, too.
You've got the suit.
And the car.
That's right, the car. And you know what you got besides that? You got the bay, baby.
I don't live with a really, really dumb sheriff or mayor in town.
Right. And you know what? You ain't that rich, either.
1-800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. On we go to Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hello.
Hi, Dr. Zorba and Mr. West.
How can I help you with my fancy mobile? What kind of trouble are you in?
Well, I have a serious bacterial eye infection. Mm. And for the past couple of years, I've had really, really red, irritated eyes. I look like I sit around smoking pot all day, and I don't.
Oh.
And the doctor has prescribed antibiotics and 2 or 3 different eye drops, but recently she prescribed Restasis. And the website says don't take this if you have an infection.
Oh, she prescribed Restasis for what?
Well, after I had been taking the other eye drops for about a month,
mm-hmm.
I went in to see her, and the eyes were still really red. So she said, well, let's add Restasis to the mix and mm-hmm. take it twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
So I did start it, and I'm still taking it, and I'm still on all the antibiotics. It's been now a couple of months.
That's quite a long time. Let's talk a little bit about eyes. First of all, is the eye red, the globe of the eye, in other words, when you look at the eye, or is this a problem with the lashes or the upper lid?
No, the whole eye, both eyes.
Okay, a couple of things. First of all, I would wash your eyes every night. And I'd wash them with a dilute solution of Johnson's Baby Shampoo. You just put a few drops in water, take some fresh cotton balls every single night. You wash the eyelashes, wash the eyebrow above there, because the eyebrow can have things in it that kind of fall into the eye. They're above the eye, and it's kind of a little curtain above the eye, and wash below the eye. And I would do that at least once a day or twice a day. That's what I would do. The next question is, you're putting how many drops are you putting in your eye now? Are you putting in an antibiotic drop and
uh-huh.
Restasis?
Right. I'm using Lotemax and Azocyte.
Okay. So the other issue is whether or not you should just stop all of the drops altogether, wash the eye, let it sit there for a few days and see what happens. In other words, are you having a reaction to some of the medication that's actually in the eye? Now, This is not unusual. This happens less than 5% of the time, but it's a common thing that people can have reactions to chemicals, even the chemicals that are going to help us. So if it were me, I'd say, you know what? It's not working. My eye is still red. I'm going to give it a rest. I'm going to wash my eye twice a day and put nothing in it and see what happens. Because you might have developed an allergy, which is not a true allergy, but is more of an irritation or hyper-irritation of one of the drops that are going in the eye.
Then after a couple of days, if it hasn't...
Then I would talk to your physician, and I would look at either trying to stop it with a with Acular. Acular, A-C-U-L-A-R, okay, is an anti-inflammatory eye drop. And some people, it works beautifully. Acular is what I would look at, and I would just try a plain anti-inflammatory eye drop. It's kind of like ibuprofen for the eye.
Okay.
That's really what it is. I would try that and just see if that works.
Great.
And those are kind of the things I'd look at. But you might be having a reaction to the drops. You might have started with an infection, but now kind of have a reaction. So.
Okay. Well, that's what I'll do.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Good
Thanks
luck.
A lot. We appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, some new research on kids and TV.
Yes, yes. Well, TV. Now, I grew up with TV. I mean, I remember when we had a TV in the house,
yeah,
and we got it, you know, black and white. Nobody knows what black and white TVs are anymore. It's, you know, it's color or whatever. But television is an issue. We had four kids, and, you know, if you plopped them in front of the TV, Sesame Street or whatever, they were quiet.
Yeah.
And so some parents just plopped their kids in front of the TV longer and some shorter. Mm-hmm. This is a longitudinal study that came out of Canada. They've been following 2,400 children, mm-hmm, and they've been following them over time, not just looking at TV watching, but playtime, TV watching, what they eat, how they engage in school. These children are now in fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they went back and they looked at the kids and they did some analysis of television watching at 2.5 years of age, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So 2.5 year kids, you know, the kids are somewhat verbal, put them in front of the TV, and here's what they found. They found that when they watched more television, they were more likely to be fat, in other words, obese.
Mm-hmm.
They were less likely to engage in athletic activities, physical activities. They were more likely to be bullied at school. They were less likely to engage in social activities in school. They were more likely to be withdrawn socially.
Mm.
They did poorer on math tests, and their reading scores were lower.
Mm.
Reading scores were lower. So you look at this, and you say, okay, what's going on here? Yeah, and I think, first of all, the bottom line is TV makes you stupid, okay? Now, let's go back what that is, because I think this is a very important study.
Mm-hmm.
2.5-year-olds have brains that are developing all the time. And the way the neuropathic brain develops is it develops with human interaction. Talk to you, you talk to your child, you coo, you interact with them.
Mm-hmm.
Television is non-interactive.
Right.
It's like putting them in front of a blank wall. Now, there are all of these DVDs that are out there called Baby Einstein, Baby IQ.
Right.
Set your kid in front of the TV. You know, they'll find it. This is an IQ and they're going to learn something. And the answer is no, they're not.
Yeah.
They're bogus. And studies of that, by the way, have shown they do absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And parents spend hundreds and thousands of dollars for these. The answer is TV for short periods of time to sort of Sesame Street and quiet, mm-hmm, your child, mm-hmm, while you're doing something is okay. But read to your child, interact with your child, talk to your child, and get them away from the TV. It is the dumb, stupid box.
Yeah. This was a Canadian study.
Yeah.
Well, our TV in the U.S. is lots more educational.
That's right. It's the Canucks. Those Canucks don't have the same TV that we have. That's exactly what it is.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413.
You know, Tom, that's why you're here, to just put this straight.
Let's get back to the phones. A listener in Jacksonville Beach, Florida. Hello.
Hello there. Thank you for taking my call.
We appreciate it. How can we help?
When I wake up in the morning, I have this sensation of pins and needles in both the ball and heel of my foot, or both of my feet. And it's just the first couple of steps that I take in the morning when I get out of bed, and then after that it goes away and doesn't come back. I work in an emergency department. I'm about a 24-year-old female. I'm active 4 to 5 days a week, physically fit, but I have this sensation. One of the doctors has suggested that I take a golf ball or a tennis ball and just roll my feet on it at the end of the day. What are your thoughts on that?
So does this happen to you just when you're working or when you're not working too?
All of the time.
All the time.
Working, working or not working.
How about on vacation? You're on vacation. You're doing something you'd like to do. 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you have these pins and needles feeling?
No, it's never in the afternoon. It's usually only after that period of anywhere from 5 to 8, however many hours of sleep I'm able to get when I wake up in the morning. It's never throughout the day, and it's always only those first couple of steps that I take.
Okay, and then it goes away. So it's just when you
get away.
Okay. So a couple of things, first of all, that I think of. I don't think it's circulatory, because if it's circulation, it ought to get worse when you're walking. That's what circulation is. Circulation, as you walk, things get worse. It's not circulation. I also don't think it's neuropathic. Neuropathic pain, which is a nerve that's firing the wrong way, tends to get worse with exercise, movement, walking situations like that. So even though it's a pins and needly feeling, mm-hmm. we have to wonder, is it a nerve issue or is it, you know, is it a vascular issue? And I think it's more of a musculoskeletal issue. In other words, I think it's more the tendons and the ligaments, and there's something that's going on with the way you're sleeping that's almost a cramp type of situation. And it's uncomfortable.
What I might mention is that when I'm 24 now, when I was 18, 19, I used to run through wooded trails.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Barefoot.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And why did
you do that, by the way? You didn't tell me that. Why did you walk barefoot through wooden trails?
Because it's fun.
It was actually fun. I felt connected. I know that sounds silly.
I know it doesn't sound silly. No, it doesn't sound silly.
It felt great. And
You're in nature.
Yeah. Absolutely. But I would run for you know, sometimes anywhere 3 to 5 miles.
Wow.
Without shoes. Uh-huh. And I mean, eventually I got to the point where I realized that wasn't the best for my body, for my feet in particular.
Sure.
And I certainly ran into quite a few roots here and there.
Anyway, well, I think that is part of the issue. And I think that the question is, before you get out of bed, now, do you have the feeling when you're in bed or when you may take those first steps?
No, it's just when I take those first steps.
Okay. Here's the suggestion. I would recommend that you walk from the emergency room to the physical therapy department and you ask and you ask them for some TheraBands, T-H-E-R-A, TheraBand, B-A-N-D. And is that a dog in the background, by the way?
Yeah, it is. I'm out on the back porch.
Okay, yeah. Just checking to make sure the dog's okay. Well, the dog will help you with this. You can teach the dog to do the exercises with you. Anyway, the TheraBands, what you want to do is take the band, hold it around your foot, and stretch your foot with these big rubber bands. That's really what they are before you get out of bed. And talk to the physical therapist. You know, they love to give you information on the fly about some exercises that you can do for your Achilles tendon and your plantar tendon. This is a problem, I think, with almost like a plantar fasciitis that's occurring because people with plantar fasciitis have pain when they get up in the morning to move. And I think if you stretch that tendon before you get up with maybe a 30 seconds of exercise, you may not have the sensation. It's a tendon issue. It's not dangerous. And basically, sometimes these things go away with time, but you need the physical therapist to give you some advice.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Now, she couldn't cure this by running barefoot in the woods.
Barefoot in the park. That was a play.
800-462-7413. Before we close out the segment, Zorba, let's clear out some of our inbox by kicking off another edition of Rapid Fire. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Renee from Green Bay, Wisconsin, starts things off by asking this admittedly silly question. Is it okay to eat raw potatoes like she did when she was a kid?
Absolutely. Enjoy them. I eat raw potatoes myself.
From potatoes to coffee now, Zorba. Azim in Illinois, who is a type 2 diabetic, has noticed his weight go down as his coffee drinking goes up. He'd like to know if caffeine can weaken the appetite.
Absolutely not. Caffeine doesn't weaken the appetite at all, but diabetics who drink caffeine may actually have better blood sugar, so drink on.
Keeping with the food theme, let's go international and take this question from John in Sorrento, Italy, who writes, I live in northern Italy and absolutely love the cheeses here, along with everything else. I'm wondering if the hard cheeses, Asiago, Grana, Parmesan are heart healthier than the soft cheeses Gorgonzola, Brie, Bufala.
Well, cheese is cheese is cheese. The higher the fat, kind of the more problem it is, but the greater the pleasure, and the greater the pleasure, the longer you live, and that's the sweet life. So cheese yourself on.
Did I do okay with the pronunciations? All I know is American, cheddar, and Swiss.
Now, wait a second. You're asking me? I'm not Italian. How would I know?
Next up is Leslie from Tomahawk, Wisconsin, who'd like to know, when applying a sunscreen to the face, should it be put on before you put on makeup or after?
Oh, good question. Well, if you put it on after, you'll look all pasty and silly, so I think I'd put it on before. Makes no difference. Put it on, wait 10 minutes, then put your makeup on. It'll absorb into the skin, and it's cool.
I always put it on after.
You know, you need to powder your nose down.
An anonymous emailer would like to know the best book for a male midlife crisis.
Oh, gosh. A best book for the male midlife crisis. I will pick it out and put it on our website at ZorbaPastor.org. You will get that on the website. Just tune in.
How about the longevity code?
Oh, that's great. I'll put my book up there. Thank you.
Finally, Gil heard us chatting about the scopolamine patches and weighs in. I'm a pilot and I see many passengers wearing scopolamine patches. This always gives me a little laugh. In the Gregory Peck movie, The Guns of Navarone, scopolamine is used as a truth serum.
Well, first of all, it's not scopolamine, it's scopolamine.
Oh.
So, I mean, you pronounced the cheeses correctly, but you didn't pronounce it. You didn't pronounce the drug, scopolamine.
Either the emailer was wrong or our producer in...
Well, we really won't be able to answer that question. But the guy was
scopolamine.
Right. The guy was right. In larger doses, what it does is it makes you inebriated, and it may be truth serum.
Yeah.
And in tiny, tiny doses, the scopolamine patch actually reduces seasickness and air sickness. So the reality is, yes, he should chuckle all he wants to, but... The people who wear the patches still may not tell the truth.
And on pronunciation, our producer blames the emailer. We're out of time for this edition of Rapid Fire, but make sure to get your question in for our next round. Just send your email to...
Zorba@WPR.org.
A yummy recipe coming up, more of your calls, our medical mythbusters, some interesting research, lots of great reasons to stay tuned to Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI. Public Radio International. Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our phone number again is 1-800-462-7413. Callers are waiting, but an open line for you at 1-800-462-7413. Now, this sounds like a good recipe, Zorba. Grilled Mediterranean chicken.
Yeah, I mean, what could sound better? I mean, poultry, I happen to like chicken.
And better for you, too.
It's better for you. Yeah. It's grilled, so we know, you know, we move away from high fat and Mediterranean.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds wonderful. I mean, you eat this chicken, and I get visions of the Mediterranean Sea. It's blue out there. It's an azure blue. You know, there's a soft wind blowing. You got me.
The next time at fast food, I will ask for grilled Mediterranean chicken.
That's right. And you'll be there. Dream on, as the phrase goes. Dream on. Okay, so what do we start with? Four boneless chicken breast. We want to make them in the size that you want to eat them. Some of them are really big, and I cut them in half then.
And four chicken breasts.
That's right.
Have skinless and boneless.
That's right. A couple of tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
To big T olive oil.
And spend your money on good olive oil. There's good olive oil and there's olive oil. And I buy good olive oil, which I really, really like. I get it on the web and I think it's really delicious. A half pound of wild mushrooms.
Half a pound wild mushrooms.
Now, the thing about mushrooms that's very interesting is when I say wild mushrooms is if you can get them. You can use regular button mushrooms. But in most grocery stores now, you have porcino mushrooms, you have shiitake mushrooms, you've got oyster mushrooms. I recently came back from a trip to Tibet, and there was a whole – I went to an outdoor market, and there were like 30 different kinds of mushrooms, Whoa. Mushrooms that I had never seen. Hmm. And I was taking pictures of them. They just look beautiful.
You're taking pictures of mushrooms?
Of mushrooms, well, you know, because they – yeah, you know, when I travel, I take
Whatever
pictures
turns
of
you
food.
On, sorry.
I have to tell you, when I travel, I take pictures of food. I sent them over on the net to my wife and kids who were back there, and they said, was this a food tour to Tibet? I mean, it's like all I did was talk about what I ate and saw. So a half cup of low-sodium chicken broth.
Half a cup low-sodium chicken broth.
Now, low-sodium chicken broth costs a little bit more than the non-low-sodium, but there was an interesting article in Cook's Illustrated where they did taste tests, mm-hmm. and low-sodium chicken broth actually has more taste, and they have to make it tastier with more of a chickeny taste because they don't have as much salt. Mm-hmm. So it actually has a superior taste to it.
But
it's not bland.
If you just have it by itself without being in a recipe, it's well, that's nowhere different. Near
no,
as
no,
good
but it's
you.
A recipe. In other words, for a mixture, yeah, you will get more. Oh, no,
that's
I understand.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It has more taste. Quarter of a cup of white wine.
Quarter cup white wine.
As you know, I use vermouth because it stays on the shelf. It's there all the time. It's cheap. It's inexpensive. And I use Gallo vermouth. Gallo. That's the one that works because some of the vermouth is too sweet and Gallo works. It's
Must
cheap.
Be the cheapest, too.
How did you know? Half cup of Carmenta olives chopped.
Half a cup of Carlamento olives. What Carlamento. Are Carlamento olives?
They're a black olive, and they taste different. They're cured a little differently. Mm-hmm. You know, you're used to the sort of black olives, which are relatively tasteless. I like the taste. They're a bland taste, but they're mm-hmm. good. Green olives, which are more ripe, and they have a stronger taste. But this is a different mm-hmm. taste. Two plum tomatoes seeded and diced.
Two plum tomatoes seeded and diced.
You can use canned ones if you don't have fresh ones. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, especially in the wintertime, the canned are better. The fresh are mm-hmm. not very good. Five garlic cloves minced.
Five garlic cloves minced.
Half a tablespoonful of chopped shallots.
Half a big tea chopped shallots.
A tablespoonful of butter.
A big tea butter.
Half a cup of cherry tomatoes cut in half.
Half a cup cherry tomatoes cut in half.
Some parsley to garnish.
Mm-hmm.
And salt and pepper.
S&P.
Let's make it. Prepare the grill and then preheat the oven to 200 degrees. Then season the chicken breasts with salt and pepper so that they're just about the taste you want to have. Brush it lightly with a tablespoonful of olive oil and then grill until lightly browned on the grill, just cooked through. You don't want it to be overcooked because it will be too dry. Then transfer to an oven-safe dish and place it in the oven to keep it warm. Put it in the oven, keep it warm. Now, in a large skillet, heat the remaining olive oil over high heat. Add the mushrooms and sauté until brown, about 3 minutes. Then add the broth and wine and boil until most of the liquid evaporates. Then add the olives, plum tomatoes, garlic, and shallots, and season with some salt and pepper. Once again, seasoning to taste. Then reduce the heat to medium. So you've got this broth, medium heat, simmer for about 7 minutes until the liquid is reduced by half. It'll be a nice concentrated mixture. Then add the butter, mix it in. I usually mix it in with a little wire mixer. So mix it in with a brush of some sort until it's melted, and then add the cherry tomatoes. Check the seasoning for S&P. Spoon the mixture over the chicken breast. Garnish with parsley and enjoy.
Sounds good.
It sounds good. Now it almost sounds like it's complicated, but it isn't. Basically, you're making the chicken breast. You're making this broth, sautéing the veggies first, putting it in. It doesn't take very long at all, and then you're reducing the broth to concentrate. It's wonderful. Nutritionally, it's about 450 calories roughly per chicken breast, which is not very much. It has some fat. It's got 25% of the fat that you have for the day, but it also has 115% of the protein. In other words, this is your protein for the day.
Whoa.
So it's really wonderful. Chicken breast is loaded with protein. It's a great dish.
If some of our listeners were not able to memorize as we went along, they can probably find this recipe somewhere.
I bet they could. I bet if they went to zorbapastor.org, they would find this recipe. And in fact, they would go to the archives and find a lot of our other recipes, and they could even sign up for our weekly podcast. That's zorbapastor.org.
is our toll-free number. 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, and a listener in Kaukauna, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. How are you today?
We're fine. How can we help?
Well, I'm calling about my blood pressure. It usually runs very low. In fact, my doctor once told me that she would have to take it again because she couldn't file an insurance claim on a zombie.
How low was that?
Okay. Normally, my top numbers are 80s, low 90s, and my bottom numbers are 60s to 70s.
Oh.
Insurance claim on a zombie. Now, that's very interesting. I love it.
Well, now what I've started to notice is my numbers are going up, such that at my last checkup it was 124 over 80. Now, I know that's normal, but is that abnormal for me?
Well, let's go back to first of all, some people have low blood pressure, some people have high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. So let's go back to when it's 80 over or 90 systolic being that first number. Are you dizzy with that?
No,
good.
It's never been a
good
problem for
good
me.
So that's the first and most important thing. Some people have low blood pressure, and we actually have to give them a mineral corticoid. That's the sort of name of the medication that we give, which increases the retention of salt in the body and does some other things and actually increases their blood pressure. Mm-hmm. We don't do it very commonly, but we do it because some people have drop attacks and they are dizzy. They get up from a sitting to a standing position and they collapse on the floor, and we have to give them something. So, A, there is nothing wrong with low blood pressure. And in fact, low blood pressure tends to mean that the arteries in your body are more supple, which is good. You know, the opposite of hardening of the arteries. A question, grandparents on either side, who lives longer? Do you have grandparents who live a long life?
My grandmother did. Well, actually, both my grandmothers did.
And what did they live? How long did they live?
One into her 80s. The other was 94.
94. So you, because that's actually low blood pressure, and a blood pressure that's even going up, like you said, to a normal range of 124, which is not abnormal, even though it's higher for you, it's mm-hmm still a very safe blood pressure, implies you have a very good young vascular system. The arteries in your body are supple as long as you don't smoke, which you don't, right?
Oh, no.
And your cholesterol, I bet, is low.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it would be low. What's your number? Do you know?
Don't remember, yeah, but I remember it was good.
Yeah, it's usually a very good cholesterol. I mean, basically, you've got good genes, and low blood pressure means you're probably going to live well into your 90s. You may even live well into your 100s.
Ooh, I'll be there to harass my children a long time.
Keep up the good work.
Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you so much.
800-462-7413. And Zorba, before the break, we need to address a past recipe during this edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. On a past show, we featured a fantastic recipe for a Southwestern vegetarian cornbread bake. One of the ingredients for this meal was Jiffy cornbread mix. You and our guest chef recommended it because it was quick and easy. Well, our inbox was nearly crashed by our listeners, who were all quick to point out that Jiffy cornbread mix contains animal lard or protein and is therefore not a vegetarian ingredient or dish.
Oh, I had no idea at all that it contained lard. You mean it says actual L-A-R-D?
Animal lard. Lard.
Well, first of all, lard only comes from animals.
Yeah, lard.
It comes from pigs.
Lard.
I mean, lard is pig fat.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why it tastes so good. Well, you learn something new every day, don't you?
Well, we should point out, though, Zorba, that this was just a recommendation and that both you and our guest chef said that if you have another vegetarian cornbread recipe, that you can use that instead.
Yes, you know, this reminds me of this whole McDonald's thing with the fact that their French fries were coated with some beef tallow to give it some taste.
Yep.
Well, anyway, it tastes good. Enjoy it. And lard, well, lard speaks for itself.
Yeah. Now, maybe you should take a day off a week of your practice memorizing all the ingredients and everything in the grocery store. Then we would never have to have this sort of problem. That wraps up this edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Send in your rebuttal for our next edition in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some really interesting research coming up. Lots more of your calls, our medical myth buster as well. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. We'll take our next call, Zorba, after some talk about acid reflux drugs, some new research suggesting there may be real problems with them.
Well, there are problems. Let's look at acid reflux, and let's look at the whole concept of stomach problems. First of all, the first group of drugs that came out, which were called H2 blockers, histamine blockers, the person who invented the whole concept got the Nobel Prize for good reason. That person, that scientist, stopped more stomach pain than any other person ever in the history of the world. Morphine wouldn't do it. Maalox and Mylanta wouldn't do it. Dynamite, fabulous drugs. Then we had...
Which were those drugs?
Those are Zantac, Tagamet, Pepcid-AC, on the market. They're really good drugs. And they're great. They're wonderful. So then other drugs which were developed called proton pump inhibitors, and they work differently. And basically block acid production versus blocking the way acid is affected in the stomach. They're just a different group of drugs, more effective in drugs like Zantac and Pepcid. But Zantac and Pepcid are still good. So we look at these drugs and a lot of people around them. Prilosec is the most common drug called omeprazole. Prevacid is on the market. The purple pill, Nexium, those are very popular drugs. Now, what we found out a couple of years ago is that people who took these drugs every single day appear to have more pneumonia. What's going on here? Well, maybe a little bit of the acid that goes up the esophagus, that's maybe at the top of the esophagus, kills bacteria that may get into the lung. In other words, there may actually be a purpose for having some acid, not having too much acid that upsets your stomach, but some acid. Well, now, a recent study, a study of studies, looked at other problems and looked at problems with fractures, bone fractures. And according to these researchers, there was a 25% increased risk in bone fractures in women and a 75% increase in a certain intestinal infection called Clostridium difficile.
Well, this is serious stuff.
This is serious stuff. And whether or not this really pans out in some other long-term studies remains to be seen. But I think the bottom line issue is these drugs are very good, but you may not need to take them every day. And for years we've been telling people you've got acid reflux, take it every day. And the answer may be you have acid reflux, take it when you need it. In other words, some people need it every day, but a lot of people don't, they stay on it.
But if you do need it every day and take it every day, you have these risks.
Well, you have a risk with any drug that you take, and you look at stomach pain, and you look at you may have an increased risk of fractures, so put on your calcium, you know, drink your calcium and do your exercise. But I think this looks at drugs that you take every day. To take a drug every day means you increase your risk, so you should be careful and therefore reduce it by taking it only as needed.
1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba, in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Hi, my name is Kirk. How you doing? I'm calling in regards to some migraine headache issues I've been having since I was a young child. They started like when I was like 11 or 12. I can remember getting the aura and kind of having light sensitivity, sound sensitivity, and it seemed as I got older, they kind of went away. And then when I became an adult, I was in a motorcycle accident at work, and the migraines came back, and they were, like, really strong. And as I got older, and in the, like, the last 5-10 years, I really haven't gotten them that much, but I always have the Zomig in my pocket just in case I would get one because it would be kind of devastating. It would be hard to drive because I really couldn't see. And recently, we had some pollen problems in New Jersey where I live, And when the pollen gets to be strong around here, I noticed I was walking around thinking, I feel like I'm getting one to come on. And I just want to know if this pollen was like a trigger or if this could have something to do with it, because I never had any problems with pollen at all until recently. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like because of the pollen's on the outside of the cars, if you open the windows, it gets all in the house. And it just seems like it's been something that's agitating. I just want to see if you felt that had anything to do with it.
We'll see if Zorba can help, but I'm trying right now to get my brain around. See, I've worked in offices all my life, offices or studios. I'm trying to get my brain around motorcycle accident at work, and I'm picturing you in a building racing around. And
what kind of work was it?
Were you have a motorcycle accident?
I'm a police officer. It was a police motorcycle accident.
That explains it.
That's right. Not exactly the same as your office work. So first of all, migraines. Let's look at it globally. Migraines tend to get less as you get older. That's kind of one of the benefits of age. If you have migraines, they tend to be less. And there's no one drug that works for migraines. There are many, many different drugs that work for migraines. And migraines have triggers. So for some people, the trigger can be red wine. For other people, it can be white wine. For some people, it's wheat beer. For other people, it's another beer. For some people, it's cheese. Certain cheeses will trigger. Chocolate, nuts. Pollen definitely triggers migraine. There's no doubt about it. And taking an over-the-counter antihistamine, generic Claritin, great drug, works very well, cheap, inexpensive. You take one or two tablets a day. Will often keep those migraines from happening if you feel you're right on the edge of it. So I would treat the allergy part of your life with that, or with a steroid nasal spray, which also works very well for allergies, a prescription drug, and that would work for a trigger. In other words,
that's the Lorlatrin 10 milligrams?
Loratadine, 10 milligrams.
Loratadine.
And
okay.
If one doesn't work, you take two. Take two tablets.
Should take that as a preventative?
Yeah, I would take it every day during the pollen season. And the pollen season usually, for some people, it's the spring. For some people, it's midsummer. For some people, it's the fall. So take it during the pollen season. If that works, you're home free. If it doesn't work, you may want to consider going on a prophylactic medication for migraines, and often a low dose of a beta blocker such as Inderol, which is which comes in a generic, or Atenolol, which is also a generic, can be very good drugs. And sometimes that low dose will also keep migraines from happening. So a little antihistamine, over-the-counter, cheap. I'd start with that. If not, I'd consider the beta blocker and see if that works. And another thing to add is sometimes one aspirin tablet a day in the morning can get rid of half the migraines for some people. So
that's regular aspirin?
Regular 325 milligram aspirin, one or two aspirin tablets a day. For some people who are right on the edge, on the verge of a migraineous attack, that can make a difference. Or Excedrin migraine, two tablets once a day can often do the trick.
Is that the stuff that has the caffeine, is that correct?
That has a little caffeine in it.
Excellent. That sounds great.
Yeah, now before you go, that was good advice, right, you think?
That was excellent advice.
Now, so if Zorba or I are speeding in Atlantic City and you catch us, you're going to give us a little break?
Absolutely, especially if Zorba starts laughing, I'll know it's him immediately.
Thanks a lot
for the call.
Thank you very much, guys.
Bye-bye.
All right, take care.
Time now, Zorba. Once again, our medical myth buster is upon us. Today's myth deals with this Hollywood trend of filming blockbusters in 3D. It's all the rage, except for some people that claim it makes them sick. Can 3D really make you ill?
Absolutely, 100%. There's no doubt about it. In fact, there was a recent article about 3D and what it actually does. Now, first of all, 3D is not 3D. I mean, it looks like it's 3D, right? It's an optical illusion.
Well, it's 3D.
Well, it's 3D, but it's not three dimensions like what I'm looking at in the radio in the studio right now.
Well,
I mean, these are really three dimensions.
It's a movie.
It's fake.
a movie isn't real.
It's not real, but it's a fake.
But anyway, it is.
But it fools the eyes.
Yeah.
But the way it fools the eyes is by sensory conflict. And what happens is it makes the eyes believe that something is actually coming towards you when it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And as a result, sometimes that produces a difference in what the brain is actually perceiving to what the brain thinks it's perceiving. There's a conflict.
Uh-huh.
And that conflict produces the headache. Now, it's not really a mental conflict. It's a conflict between how our eyes rotate and show us something is really coming towards us or away from us, mm-hmm. you know, in real and daily life. And it fools it by taking one eye and having it focus on one thing and having the other eye and having it focus on the other thing. So the answer is yes. It's not a myth. It does give some people headaches. And I've got the answer.
What?
Don't go to 3D.
Yeah.
That's really the
but
answer.
But the other thing, it doesn't last. It isn't a
– No. There's nothing long-lasting. Not at all. It's not like going out and getting drunk and getting into a car crash. Yeah, going to a 3D movie and you get a headache. It doesn't feel good. You know, I'll tell you, though – I mean, I'm joking about the alcohol. This is the same as loud music in concerts. When you're 18 or 19, you want loud music and it sounds great. And frankly, when you're 40 and 50, it gives you a headache.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a sensory-wise, you don't want to be surrounded by that much loudness. So what do? You don't go to rock concerts or you say turn down the sound.
Yeah.
And this is the same with 3D. Some people don't tolerate.
I wonder if that's an age thing too. If as you get older, you're more likely to get these headaches from 3D.
Well, it may be. But this also may be the way people focus. So.
If a myth seems too real for you and you'd like Zorba to bust it, just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
Yes. How can we help?
I was calling... My question relates to bee stings. When I was 17, I was stung by a bee. I believe it was like a yellow jacket. I never really had it tested or anything like that. But I was stung and I broke out with an allergic reaction. I had hives. And my question is that I've always been really interested in honeybee farming and you know, with honeybees, and I know that there's, you know, yellow jacket sting, and I know that, you know, sometimes you have an allergic reaction, you could have other reactions, but I guess my question is whether there's a potential possibility for me not to be allergic to honeybees, or...
That's really interesting. You're allergic to bees, but you have this urge to farm them.
Yeah. Pretty much. It's kind of weird, but...
What do you think,
Zorba? It's kind of weird? I would say that's kind of weird. So what sort of reaction did you have when you were 17?
I had, just like I broke out in hives, I started off getting kind of really itchy. My skin, I remember the palms of my hands and my head started getting really itchy after I was stung. And then I broke out with the red welts, the heat sensitive areas, like in my thighs and in my arms and stuff, and like kind of on my face too. And then I ended up going into the ER and they did the Benadryl and epinephrine, I believe, injections at that point. And then I was fine after that. I have been stung since, and I believe I was stung by a bumblebee. I never had any reaction at that point. And I've been stung when I was a kid by different bees. And I never had reactions. It was a shock to me to have a reaction to a bee sting at all.
Wait a second. I want to get this straight. I don't get stung that often. How do you get stung by all these insects? I mean, and you're attracted to bees? I mean, what's going on in your life?
Well, I always found it really fascinating for honey, you know, with honeybees. And when I was a kid, walking barefoot, I think one was a bumblebee sting on my foot. And one time I was in the bathroom and I stuck my finger on a toilet paper roll and there was a bee back there and stung my finger. So I've been, you know, stung a couple times as a kid.
Okay. So first of all, bee sting venom or venom from bee stings, wasps, hornets are very serious. There are generally... two people a year, between one and two, maybe three people a year, who die of rattlesnake bites, okay, venom from rattlesnakes. And there are 250 to 500 people a year who die from venom from insects.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're talking about 100 times, you know, as many people die from insect-type bites. So if you want to do honeybees, first thing I would do is I'd go to an allergist and be tested for honeybees to see if I'm allergic to them. Because I don't know what the differences are. And clearly you've been, you know, as you said, you've been stung other times since that time and never developed, an anaphylactoid allergic reaction.
Yeah.
Do you carry a bee sting kit with you or an EpiPen with you? You
know, I do have an EpiPen. I sometimes forget it, but I usually try to bring it with me, like especially if we go camping or someplace
where
I'm not nearby, you know.
Good. No, that's that's important. When you when you've had a you know, a full body reaction, you want to make sure that you've got an EpiPen around for that. But before I would do it, I would be tested specifically to find out whether or not I could do it. Because even though you have a fascination with it, it's just like people have a fascination with other things that are not healthy for them.
Right.
Sometimes we have to not engage in that fascinating activity because it's not healthful. And in your case, it means being tested. So the answer is the venoms are different. You've proven that in your body. Check a different venom and see whether or not that makes a difference, too.
Okay. Just go see an allergist, which I kind of thought was the response I'd get. But I just was curious if you knew, because I thought maybe that, you know, wasps or yellow jacket wasps and the bees were different. So
they are. They are different.
Okay.
And remember, you know, for you, it's a fascination. And if it's safe, you know, go for your passion. And don't forget to send us some honey.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
We're almost out of time for the week, Zorba, but before we leave, we have a warning here from a member of the Zorba Pastor and Your Health Grammar Police. This comes from loyal listener Deputy Mark, who may be a part of the Department of Redundancy Department. He writes, "We regret to inform you that the Grammar Police have issued another citation to you. On your program, you referred to your past history. This is redundant. History is, by definition, past. Would you speak of your present history or your future history? I think not. We are giving you only a warning because we don't want to use up your points and lose your grammar license."
Past history, you know. In medicine, we do the past medical history, but they're right. We could say medical history because past is redundant. So thank you for not giving me points. I can still keep my license. Cool.
If you'd like to be deputized in the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police, you can do so by sending your citation or email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Take care, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich, and Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. Theme music by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0522Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.